Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Wednesday afternoon. A little bit later in the program, Scott Kleinberg will be here. He is most Wednesdays to talk about what's going on social media and Facebook and Instagram. They have their year-end list for the most searched items or most discussed items, and not a big surprise on Facebook. And I guess if you follow Instagram, it won't be a big surprise either. But most of the top 10 or much of the big 10 involves Taylor Swift. No surprise there, but the other part of it might be a bit shocking. Peter Bregman is an author of 4 Seconds. We'll be here in the second half hour as well. His idea is that maybe you've read his books before or seen one or more of his TED Talks, but Peter's latest idea when it comes to business or anything else in life is that our instant sort of reaction, instant reactionary activity doesn't usually serve us well. He suggests 4 seconds, a deep breath, and then rethinking it. He'll sort that out. But right now, Terry Savage from terrysavage.com and the Huffington Post and just about everywhere else is on a phone line to talk with us, as she does most Wednesdays. And she is wearing today a very lovely pre-interest rate hike gown. It looks beautiful, Terry.
Yes, sparkling with diamonds, emeralds, and rubies, prices of which are going down because interest rates are going up.
Okay, so
all
there's
commodities will be hit by higher interest rates that make the dollar more attractive. But what a creative lead-in, Steve.
There's no way that it doesn't happen about an hour from now, right?
Oh, my gosh, that would be the shock of the century. No, we're past, and the market, more important, the pundits are past it, but the market is past the expectation or the question of whether they will raise rates. And now it's into the issue of what will they say about their future plans for future increases? Because you can be, it's like cockroaches. There won't be just one, that's for sure.
So if you see one rate hike, there's another one hiding under your toothbrush somewhere. Is that what you're telling me?
Exactly. There will definitely be another rate hike. And that the question is then, will it be in January or will it be in March? And then there's another kind of technical question that we might want to talk about, is how they're going to really do this. But what I think matters to most people is that it's actually in the markets now. The stock market knows rates are going up. The savings rates that savers get won't go up very much. We've seen actually Treasury bill interest rates go up a little. That's a quicker market than CD rates. So if you've got a CD coming due, you might want to move it into a money market fund for a while, because I think you'll see CD rates move just a little bit higher, but probably not right away.
So what happened this morning, though?
The
stock market jumped up this morning at the start and then gave up much of that. Do you know what that was about?
That's just nervous traders. 100 points these days, I love seeing triple digits, but it just isn't what it used to be. Right now we're trading about flat, about even on the day. That may or may not be the right price, but it's where the market is. As I say, I don't think the market's expecting any great news. We got some reasonable news on housing today, manufacturing, not such great news, not so bad news. Look, the Fed knows what it has to do. It has to get back to normal because it has absolutely no leverage with rates at zero.
That's kind of what this is, right? This isn't, they're not doing anything to spur some sort of growth or to create some sort of activity. They're just trying to get back to some sort of normalcy.
Right. Well, you know, people who want to invest capital, the low interest rates have distorted where money goes. Savers have done silly things like buy junk bonds. I just posted a column about chicken money coming home to roost.
I want to ask you about that.
In the search for yield, people have been taking risks because the conservative money gets no return. The Fed has really distorted the market by keeping rates low. So now they have to get back to normal. A lot of people have said, excuse me, how does the Fed do that? How does the Fed actually raise rates?
Right.
Do
is it does is her is her
everybody?
Will Janet Yellen sort of snap her fingers at her news conference this afternoon and then it happens?
Yes, it's not like Alibaba or Swami or the genie in the bottle. The Fed announces that let's go back to how the Fed put money into the economy, because it'll make how it and lowered rates. The first thing it did was go out and buy all kinds of securities. For years and years and years, the Fed only bought U.S. Treasury securities. But in the crisis in 2008, 2009, and so on, we had quantitative easing. The Fed went into the open market and bought up not only Treasury securities, but mortgage-backed securities. And how did they pay for them, these securities that were held by the banks and the banking industry? They paid for them with newly created money. So when the Fed, when the, you know, Goldman Sachs or whoever it is gets a check from the Fed for the mortgage-backed securities it just sold to the Fed, they never say, I wonder if this check is good. They just dump that check right into their bank account, and bingo, you have more reserves in the system.
I wish they do that for me sometimes.
Wire transfers, right? But so they buy, the Fed buys securities and creates new money, and now the Fed will go into the open market and sell some of the huge portfolio of securities it has built up. And as they pay the Fed for these securities, the Fed will just suck the money out of the economy, not put it back into the reserves. It will just be sucked out. In effect, it will disappear. And that's a big oversimplification, but that's actually the process. It's called open market activities. And then they have some really interesting tools like overnight repos that you'll hear about. But basically, the Fed's now vacuuming money out of the market by selling its portfolio of securities. The interesting thing is, with so many securities, with so much money out there, will the Fed be able to raise rates as it plans? And the traders will be watching for that. But basically, we as consumers and investors can count on the fact that interest rates will go up a little, and they'll go up a little probably overnight. That'll get reflected in everything. Gosh, you couldn't pay any higher interest rates on your credit card interest, so that won't be affected too much. And mortgage rates are already moved up a little bit, so it would just be an excuse if they moved higher. Your CD rates will follow slowly. The money market rates you get might go up a little more quickly. But this is no big deal until we see how far it goes and how fast it goes.
So people aren't going to be looking at their passbook accounts and seeing the interest rate grow. Does passbook, does that exist? All right, so you wrote about chicken money, and I'd never heard of that before, but I talked to John Najarian a little bit about this bond issue, and I'm still not quite sure I understand it. So a lot of these junk bonds, you said maybe people were going there because they weren't getting interest in their savings or whatever, but now there's a bit of a, there's a sucking sound there as well.
Well, that's one of the interesting things the Fed will have to deal with. Look, for years and years, chicken money is a term I coined, and anybody who's listened to me over the years knows that it's money. You shouldn't be ashamed of this money. You simply cannot afford to lose. It takes a lot of discipline to leave it in a CD or a money market earning a quarter of a percent, but at least there, you know there you won't lose money, except to taxes and inflation a little bit. So people recognizing this, and the rates have been held so low for so long by the Fed, have searched for higher yields. One of the things that's pushed the stock market up is you can get higher dividend yields on some very big, good companies. Of course, you have the risk of stock prices, but people were willing to take that risk because why leave your money earning nothing in the bank? And then some people said, gee, I think bonds are safer than stocks. Well, of course, we know that's not always true. But if a company doesn't pay its interest or defaults on the IOU, the bond, that would be really risky. But people ignored that risk because they could get 5 or 6 or 7% on companies' bonds that were, well, a lot of them in the energy industry. They had to pay more, but not so much more, because people were searching to put money somewhere to get higher yields in CDs. Well, now we have a crisis in the energy sector. Oil prices are down again below $36 a barrel today. The world is, you know, is waiting for the U.S. dollar to rise, and the global economy is slowing, and there's plenty of oil around there. So the companies that borrow the money now have a problem paying the interest, and some of them will default on their bonds, not only in energy but other sectors of the economy that are really dependent on commodities. So the junk bonds, we stopped calling them junk bonds, and I've been calling them junk bonds all the way through, but many people just called them high yield. Now they're understanding the risks of higher returns. You get more money, but you suffer some risk, even if it's a bond.
That's Terry Savage. We're going to take a quick break, Terry, and come back, and you're going to tell me why I should go house hunting next month. It is 12:22. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 16 points this afternoon. Oil is down $1.58 now at $35.77. Terry Savage is on a phone line. We've been talking about the announcement we expect from the Fed about 45 minutes from now or so. And Terry wrote a column on the HuffingtonPost.com. I think it went up today, right, Terry? The column, yeah.
I just wanted to put it up today.
The idea is that you should go out and buy a house next week.
Well, you know, I have to write these things now because the Tribune syndicates my column now around the country. So it takes about a week to get into print all around the country. And I wanted to time this to be just before the day after Christmas or, you know, we all know. See, that's got your attention. We all know that this is the worst time to sell a house. I mean, my goodness, it's the Christmas holidays. It's the end of the year. It's New Year's. Or maybe at most times of the year, it's, you know, snowstorms. Nobody wants to trudge out and look. January, the bills come in. Everybody knows it's the worst time of the year to try and sell a house. Well, let's turn that upside down. How about the fact that it could be the best time to buy a house? You don't have a lot of competition. There are some people out there who really hoped it would sell all fall. They don't want to carry this house over the winter and the heating bills and the expenses. They don't want to wait till the spring, you know, thaw when everybody starts looking for houses. They want to get out of here and go to Florida before it, you know, snows.
So you might not have as many. There might not be as many houses on the market, though, right? That could be a downside. People might be holding off.
But the realtors know who's desperate. The realtors know what houses were on the market, and the people just took it off because they didn't want to show it over the holidays. And if you want to get aggressive, I gave you 5 tips about things to do before you go house shopping, things that you can do very easily right now. I'm looking at now. Let me just pull this up again. I'm at GuaranteedRate.com. GuaranteedRate.com is one of the online mortgage lenders. And I'm looking at their most popular loan rates right now. They're talking about a 30-year fixed at 3.99%. Well, it's a 4.17% APR, and you should always do compare APRs. But if you would take a 15-year fixed, you're still at 3.25% or 3.44% for APR. Adjustable rate mortgages are low. So I know a lot of people are scared off by the idea that this is the worst, you know, the interest rates are going up. I can't get it together in time. Believe me, I remember, see how old I am, I remember when mortgage rates were 13 or 14%. So here's the 5 things you need to do before you get all fired up by what I just said. The first thing is check your credit report. You just never know what stuff got on there if you haven't been checking it recently. The next thing is get pre-approved for a loan. That lets you know how much house you can afford, and it also makes you a much more attractive buyer if you can show that you're pre-approved for this loan. So they're likely to take your bid over someone else's. And then go check mortgage rates. Figure out whether you want that 30-year fixed because you're going to stay there forever, 15 years, you could save a fortune in interest, or maybe a low-rate adjustable loan because you're going to move within a few years. Those are the kinds of things to look out for before you start shopping. Do not worry about rising rates today. And finally, just organize the money you're going to need. It's not just a 20% down payment. Think about the closing costs. It could be as much as 2 or 3% of the purchase price, unless the seller is willing to pay some because they're desperate.
So when you say, but when you say organize, you mean just get the money on hand that you're going to need?
Exactly. You don't want to be saying, well, Dad's going to give me a gift, because then you're not going to get pre-approval. And you need more than just your down payment, and you don't want to wipe out all your liquidity with the down payment, the closing costs, and the attorney's fees, because for sure, moving has an expense, and then you want to redecorate just a little, and then for sure, the minute you own a house, you realize how much you need to replace or repair. So what I'm saying is that nobody's writing a column today saying, go buy a house. And I'm writing it not because I'm worried about rates going up, but because this is the ideal time because nobody's out shopping. If you're the one person that came through and the people are desperate and you bid $10,000 below or $15,000 below the list price, maybe you'll find yourself a bargain.
You know, I'd forgotten until I read your column that my wife and I, Sharon and I, we looked at our house that we bought 20 years ago on a Super Bowl Sunday, so in the dead of winter. Thanks very much, Terry. It was good to talk to you. Well, I'll be around next week. Are we going to talk next week?
Absolutely.
Great. Terry Savage. You can read more of what she has to say at terrysavage.com. You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. It's 12:36. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, everyone out there, I want you to quick take a breath, hold it, exhale. All right, I just changed your life. Maybe rather Peter Bregman just changed your life. He joins us on a phone line now. Peter, how did I do with that?
I did it along with you, and it felt great, or I'm already in a better mood.
Did I change your life, Peter?
At the right time, that could change your life. Peter, but right now, it just made my life slightly better.
Well, I'll go for that. Peter is the author of 4 Seconds, and you've probably seen him on, I've seen some of your TED Talks, and I know you wrote a book 18 minutes earlier, so you're down to 4 seconds this time. But the idea is that it's sort of like an interrupter, isn't it, this 4 seconds? It's the idea of taking what would be your immediate reaction and then just stepping back from it and maybe considering a different way. And that's probably something that we could use very often in business.
Yeah, here's what happens often to many of us, myself included. I tend to write the books that I need to read, is that we have a reaction to something. It might be, anger, it might be embarrassment, it might be fear, whatever that reaction is. And usually when we have a reaction that's an emotional reaction, we get an amygdala hit. The part of our brain that activates is the part of our brain that used to run away from saber-toothed tigers. It's the sort of fight, flight, or freeze reaction. And usually how we operate out of that place, what we do from that place, is not particularly effective to the situation we're in. What taking a deep breath does is it slows down that moment. And what we want is enough time for the stimulus to go from your amygdala, that reptilian part of your brain, to your neocortex, which is the part of the brain you think from. And if you can give it enough time to get there, you're much more likely to have a smarter, more rational, more effective, more outcome-driven response than if you react in that fight, flight, or freeze. So the 4 seconds is just the tipping point.
Does it go back to the saber-toothed tigers, or does it go back to, just childhood when we reacted sort of quickly to get out of something?
That part of our brain helped us in the saber-toothed tiger era, but we absolutely use it. It's ingrained in us. It's genetically ingrained in us. So, when you feel like you're in a situation that reads danger, you react in a way that protects yourself. But most of the situations, when your boss yells at you in the hallway, that's not actually the same as a saber-toothed tiger. It's not as dangerous as you think it is. And if you respond in a way that you might respond to a life or death situation, you respond out of fear or anger or frustration, you may make the wrong move.
All right, so let's go into the office and an employer sitting there behind a big, beautiful oak desk. He's got his feet up and the employee comes in. The employee delivers some bad news. The first thing is the boss might say, "What, you idiot? How can you do that?" You would suggest otherwise and create sort of this space between what we feel and what we do. And what would be a more appropriate response from the employer?
It's a great example that you give because it happens to us all the time. The first question I would ask you, and I would ask that we ask ourselves, right, is to take that breath and ask one question, which is, what is the outcome that I want in this situation? So oftentimes, you respond based on the situation that you're facing without thinking about where you want this to go. And the outcome just happens to be an ancillary impact of however you respond. Instead, let's make it the strategy. So the guy comes in your office and the employee comes in your office and says, I've made this horrible mistake. I've lost this money. And you're all angry. And the first question is, what outcome do you want? And if the outcome you want is to humiliate him because you think that's going to work, then maybe, you yell or you get frustrated. If the outcome is improved performance or learning or, making sure that this doesn't happen again or, holding them accountable in a way that their performance changes.
Or just getting to the...
You might want to think about doing something unnatural.
I was going to say, or just getting to the bottom of it and not scaring the employee out of making up some sort of story.
Right, yeah, and even that is dangerous. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, I was going to say, all right, so let's just say the boss wasn't enlightened. The employee is berated by his boss. She walks out and she comes upon her coworker and she's telling this guy what happened. And the guy says, you feel better. It's okay. You tried your best. You say that's not a good idea either. The idea of trying to make someone feel better ends up not paying off for anyone involved, except maybe the guy with the motivation to make the girl feel better. But it doesn't help the girl at all.
Yeah, you know, it's also a great point, and it's our gut reaction. It's the kind of thing that we would normally do. But in reality, you're arguing with someone's sort of emotional state at that point. So we want to make them feel better in part because we want to feel better, because we don't like being around someone who's sort of sad or disappointed, and we want to feel useful in that situation. We want to be the guy who says the right thing. And so oftentimes we'll sort of, you know, try to say, oh, don't feel so bad, or it happens to all of us. But in reality, it's actually better to just sit there with them a little bit and let them, like, connect with them in a way that doesn't value them or devalue them based on that most recent performance. And when that happens, they feel their own particular worth. You're not convincing them out of your feeling. You're respecting them and what they're feeling. And from that place, they can stand on their own 2 feet in a more grounded way.
Have you seen the video on, it's on YouTube, it's everywhere, called It's Not About the Nail?
Oh, yes, I love it.
Okay,
I love
so
it. It's a great,
Well, you know, that sort of speaks to gender differences, but let me just explain it. So it's this girl, and she's saying, you know, I've got this terrible aching, and I don't know what to do about it, and her boyfriend's looking at her, and she's got like a 4-inch nail coming out of her forehead. And so the boyfriend wants to fix it. He wants to say, look, take the nail out. The girlfriend is saying, you're always trying to fix things. I just want you to understand it's not about the nail. And that's kind of what you're describing here, aren't you? I mean, it's better to empathize than it is to try to fix sometimes.
Well, it depends on what they want, meaning I will be with friends and someone will be describing this problem, and I do this with my wife as well, is I'll have to pause for a second as I'm listening, and I'll have to say, so tell me what you want from me right now. I mean, do you want me to help you solve this? Because, look, I'm an author and a consultant and a coach, and, like, I'm very good at solving problems. And that's my natural default. That's where I go. But do you want me to solve this, or do you want me to just listen to you? And, you know, sometimes the person will say, I actually just want you to listen to me. And that's very hard for me to do because I see the nail and I want to remove it. But I also have to respect where they're at and what they particularly want. And at that point, I could just say, okay, I'll just listen to you. Or sometimes they'll say, give me advice.
Yes.
And then I'll have permission to give the advice.
I will post that video later, but that's everyone's homework to watch that. It's not about the nail, and you'll understand why all her sweaters are snagged. We've got just a second
it's
left.
Hysterical.
It is very funny, and it's so true. But I want to talk, too, about goals and why you say sometimes, you know, setting a goal in the office can end up being counterproductive.
You know, the goals, our wholehearted, driving, not unstoppable pursuit of goals often gets us in trouble because we achieve the goal, but the way we achieve it does damage. So I talk in the book about these examples where, you know, a quarterback, you know, was throwing too many interceptions, and he was given this goal and paid for a reduction in interceptions, right? As oftentimes we're paid for our goals.
Mm-hmm.
And that year, he actually made a lot fewer interceptions. It was great, right? Except that the team did less well because the way he achieved his goal is by just throwing fewer passes. So he achieved the goal of fewer interceptions by actually letting the balls leave his hand less frequently. Ultimately, that's not the actual goal. You find that people, when they have a really strong goal, I'll give you a great example. Right, a great example of pursuing a goal, you know, at the risk of everything else is Volkswagen, and the way they cheated computers in order to reduce the emissions testing.
Perfect.
On the diesel cars. Now, that there's a lot that's been written about that. It's really clear that there was a huge push by Volkswagen leadership and management on hitting goals that they had set. When you push that hard to hit a goal, oftentimes you'll end up finding ways to achieve it that don't actually give you what you want in the end. And so I think we should have foci. We should be thinking about what we're doing carefully. We should, you know, focus on areas that we want to improve. We should, you know, do all of that. But be careful about setting a goal that we're too aggressive at pursuing.
That's Peter Bregman, the CEO of Bregman Partners, Inc., and the author of 4 Seconds. Peter, it was wonderful to talk to you today. I appreciate it, and I hope we can do it again.
I loved it, and I hope you can as well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Bye-bye. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, thank you, Steve and Kim and Dolly McCarthy in Traffic Central. It is 12:52. I always appreciate that, Steve. Scott Kleinberg is here, writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. Scott, welcome back to the studio.
Thank you, Steve.
And so I want to start. Let's be a little serious now, because I don't know if you watched the Republican debate.
I did.
I had the numbers on it, and I've lost it. I think it was 18 million people watched, which was down from the very first one, but up from numbers 2 and 3 or 3 and 4 or something. Anyway,
right.
One of the things that came up a lot is the idea of surveillance and finding these would-be terrorists. And,
yep.
You know, the government has been beaten up for the fact that they didn't check the social media of this woman, Fasheen, on when she was trying to get, when she got a visa to come in with her fiancé.
Yep.
And they're saying, well, she posted on Facebook pro-jihadi stuff. That's a little disingenuous, isn't it? Because I think what I read was the Facebook posts were in private messages to her sister.
Yes, yes,
so
exactly.
So it's not like someone just had to look on the on her wall and see it. There was just another layer in. Anyway,
yep, correct.
It looks as if, you know, our social media postings will be subjected to a little more scrutiny in coming days.
Yeah, it looks like it's just around the corner, I guess. It was the Wall Street Journal that reported that the Department of Homeland Security is going to start looking at social media posts when it comes to visa applications. Now, whether or not that actually means private messages like you're talking about, one would assume, based on a story like this, that it would be that.
Well, it would have to be if the design is to stop people like her, and this is what she did.
Yep.
Then they would have to be looking at the private messages, not just at your wall. I mean, I just get a little defensive because it's easy to make fun of the government. They should have caught it, but it's not like she was posting on her wall. It was a little deeper than that.
Absolutely. And, you know, all this talk about privacy, all this talk about how people should have no access to our text messages or our Facebook messages, you know, that always comes up. But as was mentioned last night in the debate, you know, when it comes to security, it's all about keeping us safe, and this seems like it would go a long way in doing that.
There will be a book written about our times maybe in 20 or 50 years, but the
yep.
way we have moved back and forth and the fear that has driven it is a pretty remarkable thing.
It really is.
Someone was talking about today, there was this, and I'm digressing here, but
yeah.
I'm just thinking about the gun violence. You know, we're more scared of them because of their jihadi postings than of just a regular mass shooting, right?
Right, right.
Someone said in 2012, I think it was a New York Times columnist, more people were killed by guns in the U.S. in 2012 than during the entire Korean, Vietnam, mm-hmm. and Iraq wars.
Wow.
Isn't it amazing?
That makes you think.
But if they're a jihadi, it's just the reaction of it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm off the hook here.
Okay.
So let's go to Mars.
Speaking yes, let's go to Mars. That's a great idea.
NASA wants, or you can send me to Mars, but NASA wants, the applications are open for people to go on a mission to Mars?
Yes, and the application process is open from now until February 18th. And
are you going to apply, Scott?
You know, it's very, very tempting. It says that I need to free up a lot of my time. I need to talk to my wife. There's a lot of things I need to do before I can make that.
Is this one of those missions you don't come back from?
This is one of those that you do. This is not one of those that you don't come back from. But they're looking for people that have a doctorate. They're looking for people who have a lot of experience flying. You know, so it's not like something that you can just decide that you're going to do. But if you have those prerequisites and you're looking for a career change, this is definitely something you should look into.
I think I'll just watch.
You can do that too.
I'll stay on the ground and watch. Yep. And listen to Justin Bieber music. What's this idea you write about Bieber bombs?
So there is this service, because we need a service like this, that will text you Justin Bieber song lyrics. You pay a certain amount of money and you get a certain number of song lyrics in 24 hours. But the thing is, you is subjective. You can send this to anybody you want. So either there's somebody out there who absolutely loves Justin Bieber and you want to make their day, or there's somebody out there who you absolutely despise and you just want to get them back by sending them a whole bunch of Justin Bieber lyrics.
You've got a crafty smile on your face.
I'm going to need your phone number before we leave here today.
So the idea is, something you get a text and you look down. I don't even know what a Justin Bieber lyric would. I know some of the songs, but what's your favorite?
I'm not going to admit it.
Come on, what's?
And
I would imagine I've got you pegged as a Star Wars fan too.
Well, yes, I like Star Wars more than I like Justin Bieber. I will say that for sure.
I will say that too, and I'm not a Star Wars fan. But there's this new lightsaber app or technology you can have on your phone.
Yeah, you can basically.
you are going to be singing Justin be massaged.
Yeah, I probably will. You can put like a lightsaber, Star Wars, you know, lightsaber in front of your profile photo. So kind of like all the things that you can do to dress up your profile photo for holidays or whatever. For some people, Star Wars is a holiday, so you can put the lightsaber in front of it. And Google actually has this app that will turn your phone into a lightsaber.
It's called a flashlight, isn't it, Scott?
No, but that is pretty much the original idea. Someone will sue over that for sure.
Scott Kleinberg from the Chicago Tribune. And when we get back together on Friday, we'll do that, because I talked about doing the top searches and things like that.
Okay.
But there's some silly things, but interesting ones as well. So we'll kick that around coming up on Friday.
Sounds great.
You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.